Good morning, Dr. Clendenning. How are you today?
Hey Michael, how are you, man?
Feeling spry today. I'm
Spry, very nice.
spry, full of energy today, ready for this episode. It feels, for some reason, sometimes when we have these gaps between recording, it feels like forever between episodes. It's really not, but it feels like a big gap.
Well, I mean, I think it's one of those things that we spend a bunch of time together and then none. So it's not a matter of, hey, we're recording today, then we're recording tomorrow. There are gaps, in our space, not so much in the communication, but just in the regular piece of when you sit down to do the work.
Well, that's okay, because you need to formulate topics, have a bunch of interviews, talk to some people. I mean, I was talking to this guy doing an interview the other day, and he's a cool dude, man. He's an accomplished author. He was talking about the Founder's Treadmills, his book. Great guy. And him and I got off the topic, and I almost wish I could have ripped you out of a little box and threw you into the episode and just kept recording. I was like, ah, oh, where's Jake? We started talking about psychology, and a client, a friend of mine, turned me on to this book called The Psychology of Money, and it has to do with investing. It's fantastic. If you're in, and I know you have a lot of investment tools, if you're into investing, The Psychology of Money is a great enrichment book for the ideology of investing. I don't think it gives you any tips or anything that's crazy, but it really showcases the power of investing, but it also really showcases some reality and trends in behavior and how things are shaped, and it's a fantastic read. One of my main takeaways from that book, though, is when it comes to total disruption and the coaching world and the communication world and how you and I help people become better communicators and how we coach them both in personal and professional development is psychology, habits, where the people shaping people get their information and how that information applies to the people that have been accomplished, but necessarily like our information applies greatly to us. But we put it out there for people to add into their, to model a little bit, right? To add into their world. It may not work exactly the same way for them, but 7 out of 10 takeaways will. And now that we have our new app, and now that we have a few new things that we're launching, I feel like our tool set is going to dive perfectly into the psychology piece. Because some of it kind of gets a little custom with AI and stuff like that. So I'm actually feeling pretty good about all that. So psychology and behavior. Wouldn't you say 98% of pitfalls are people that have like learned something and then stopped using what works and revert back to old habits? Like, wouldn't you say that's just kind of like, hey, I've lost all this weight, for example, and now I'm back to eating like shit, and I'm back to. Or, you work with a corporate culture, and all of a sudden they just kind of stop doing what worked, and it's like, well, wait a minute, that's not saying that evolution isn't necessary, but Christ, man, like, So let's dive into that a little bit. What's your take on the psychology and after 90 days, if somebody stops doing what's working, like, why do people do that?
Well, it's like you said, it's reverting to old habits. It's reverting to old behavior, learned behaviors. I mean, there's so many different numbers that say how long it takes to learn one singular habit, right? I've heard anywhere from 26, 44, 68, 128 days. There's tons of variations, and I think that's variation is because no one person is the same. You can't just say, okay, Mike, we're going to install a habit. It's going to take 27 days for you because it took 27 days for me. We're not the same people, so it might take 27 days for Mike because maybe Mike's more disciplined. It may take 128 days for me because I'm going to fall off the wagon a couple times trying to install one new habit. Just the one, right? This
Not
isn't
me.
about changing your entire methodology on something. It takes time to install a singular habit to where it becomes a habit. Like, think about this. And I love the book Psychology of Money. That was one of my first reads when I started to change my relationship with money. And I say that really, really specifically because the book talks about that too. It's about your relationship with money. And so let's use that as the example. I'd say show of hands, but that's me speaking in front of a room. So like, you know, show of hands. How many people have heard the phrase, money is the root of all evil? That phrase, that quote has existed, good God, forever. I don't know who first said it, but it comes up and it shows up all the time. Well, it becomes an internalized belief. I used to have it. I used to totally have it. Coming up, you know, all those people that have all that money must have done something shady to get there. You know, they had to do something I am unwilling to do. And you build this whole backstory around what it is. And that becomes a learned behavior. That becomes a habit of how your relationship with money operates. So I never used to have a good relationship with money at all. And there are times now that I still argue with it. Like I'm referring to money almost as an entity, right? That I won't have a great relationship with it at times, and I'll be mad at it at different times. And that's just because that's how I operate with it. I'm looking at my glasses here, and apparently I crashed into something yesterday, and they are clearly bent. They're like all crooked on my head. So don't call me out on that one. I didn't see it till this morning.
Shave your eyebrows differently.
I know, shave the eyebrows. Nobody will ever see it.
Yeah, just take a razor and run it along the line of the glasses, and then,
shape your eyebrows to fit the crookedness.
Right, that way it'll look just fine.
Yep. So totally off topic, but we're doing live TV here still stuff, so it's not a matter of okay, stop, fix Jake's glasses, go back, but go, you know, think about the habits. You know, Mike talks a little bit about, you know, I lost all this weight and I gained it back. Totally happens. How many lottery winners do we see go bankrupt? And it's because they didn't know how to manage the money before. Just because they have money doesn't mean they can manage the money now. The same is true with weight loss, in my opinion, mind you, is they didn't know how to manage the healthy lifestyle before, so they aren't going to be able to manage the healthy lifestyle now. They might have been short-term disciplined to crash through some barriers and get some stuff done, but it's not about necessarily falling back into old habits. It's you didn't learn the new behavior that supports the habit. That's the psychology that I see in a lot of this, is you didn't create the new behavior.
Right. Same old behavior. Without good coaching, without some discipline, and there's almost some ratio.
Discipline. It's a bucket load of discipline that people are going to have to put into making true, authentic, genuine change. It's a ridiculous amount. It's a huge hill to climb.
Well, I often think too, when it comes to like psychology and behavior, especially in the space of body image and body shape and money as well, you have to realize you can't always operate in a vacuum. Not every condition is going to be perfect. And when you remove the conditions you're in, and then you assess the psychological impact that has, like in the you know, Catholic Christian world, there was Easter, and in the I think in the Jewish world, it's Passover, and both and any holiday has a tendency to disrupt eating patterns and life cycle patterns. So let's say you're a person who's eating primarily a certain way because you've lost weight and just kind of on that January roll, and you've maintained and you're doing, we'll call it great based on whatever standards you're setting. And then you roll into your really next big holiday, which is Easter, feasting holiday, or Passover, which again, you know, you're not eating the same foods you may have eaten. What happens then? Are you that stick in the mud that's not having, you know, your mom's certain pie? Are you not having the Easter dishes that you normally have? No, I'm staying disciplined. Or are you able to psychologically enter into that tradition, go through the tradition, and be strong enough to come out the other side without having completely obliterated as if an addict would have fell off the wagon? I feel that in that zone, being totally in control, I mean, you can put this parameter on anything. You could put it into somebody who's trying to be peaceful, not get into an argument when somebody's aggressive. You can talk to an alcoholic being in a bar. You can talk to anybody about that. But But in our parameters with business and coaching and money and success and sustained fortitude, when these normal environments come up that you're not in your bubble anymore, you know, let's speak to that, right? Let's speak to, fine, do you avoid the whole thing altogether? Or do you go through the trenches? Because sometimes you can't avoid it, right? You can't avoid a singing. You can't avoid a family dinner. I mean, and you don't want to. Like, I don't want to. I don't want to avoid certain things when I'm in certain zones. I don't want to keep operating in my bubble. Because after a while, like in Walden, right, didn't that guy finally say, wait a minute, I've been in the woods so long, I'm creating new paths, right? And what do you think of that? And what, are you an avoider, or do you kind of get in the trenches and say, hey, I'm gonna kind of dip my toe back into some areas and be with other people that are doing things that I don't normally do now, but I'm gonna get out of there and be strong enough to be, you know, not diving in. Again, I'm not talking about those of you out there with addiction issues, go back to bars and test yourself. What I'm talking about is the normal everyday things that throw you off course. Anyway, let's speak to that, Jake.
See, so mine's, I'll own this one a little bit. Mine's seasonality. Mine is seasonality, because I'm largely an outside, very active individual doing the stuff that I'm doing. And in order for me to, and I'm not a outside winter active individual. I've gone past that. So, I mean, mine's seasonality. I'm super active in the spring, super active in the summer, super active in the fall. And then I become a little bit like a bear. I go hibernate. I shut down in the wintertime. Not at all. Biblically, yes, there's a piece that talks about that's what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be taking that time to rest. You're supposed to be, you know, when the sun goes down, go to bed, that kind of thing. There is a piece that talks to that. But from a health standpoint, and especially the seasonality of all the feasting holidays, as you go through Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter and all the things where it's just food and baked goods and all the great yumminess, I pack on pounds over the winter. I have always done it. I have tried to reset that pattern a bunch of times, and I have looked at it as it's not one I can necessarily, you know, I roller coaster pretty bad. Like I'm lean and mean and fast and, you know, in great shape through the spring, summer, fall. And then I'm shutting down and I'm resting for a while. But what the part that sucks as I get older, and I'll share this with you a little bit, is I still try to jump off the couch as soon as it's spring. I literally jump off the couch in March and just go do all the things I was doing at the end of the season when I was in great shape. And my body hates me for a couple of weeks. I mean, it just feels like somebody's backing over me with a tractor. It's rough, and that's because my body has gone into that. So, is there disciplinary things I need to do in order to stay in better shape all winter? We even told ourselves this year when we came into this one, you know, we need to be more vigilant. We need to be doing yoga more, stretching more. We need to be doing more Pilates. We need to be just moving better so that come spring, it doesn't hurt as much. Didn't do it. Had every opportunity to do it. And I want to be clear about that, every opportunity. But this goes back to that psychology of old behavior. Of I could have done it. I could have chosen to do it. And the reality is, I was not around, goes back to the five people you spend the most time around. I wasn't physically around the people that are being active right now. Like we came to a place and it was just my wife and I, and we weren't around the people that are like, hey man, come do this thing. Hey, do this, let's go. And keeping me active. And I'm not self-motivated enough to drive it myself. And when I say not real active, like, my low activity times are probably still a lot higher than a lot of people's times, but they're really low for me. So I want to be clear about that. I put on easily, I don't know, probably at least 15 pounds this winter overall from fall till now. And in the last month, I've probably lost 10 of it, but it hurt. Like, I didn't have to put on the 15. You know, am I okay with going to all the holiday coolness? I love it. Like, I love baked goods. I love ham. I love prime rib and turkey and all the rich foods. I'm not going to deny myself that. is there something I need to do differently? Yeah, I need to be around a peer group of people that are going to keep me more active. I need to be around people that are going to be like, let's go skiing. Let's get on the cross-country skis today. Let's do this. Let's be active. Let's go to the gym. I need a peer group that's going to help drive me. If I want to truly change the behavior, I need a peer group for that.
Okay. Well, that leads me to my next point. You know, you could also do your microdosing of habits, right? 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there. I mean, I find that it's not super sustainable microdosing habits, but it does work a little bit if you're trying to get that fire spark, right? I find that sometimes if I just force myself, which doesn't always work, but then I realize the stuff that I talk about and I guilt myself into doing it, and then I'm happy that I did it. Microdosing, right? It just comes along. It's not perfect, but it's better than zip. But I agree. So, look, speaking of community, man, we're bringing together a bunch of people on, refresh my memory, March
13th?
May 13th. May 13th, right? We're out of March. So it's May 13th. You and I are doing a webinar. And we're hosting a training on communication. And, you know, this is what we do, right? This isn't your typical leadership training. This isn't business coaching. This isn't NLP. This is the total disruption model of communicating to customers, communicating to coworkers, communicating downstream, positioning yourself as an authority figure, using phrasing, words. We have sifted through a ton of information in our course of being able to take a podcast from zero to hero, take coaching programs and people and clients from zero to hero, right? And we want to give it to people. We want to have a set of equipment for people to put in their toolbox, go as deep as they want in our world, or stay as shallow as they want in our world. And it's all happening on the 13th. Why don't you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so we've built out a communication model that we're calling the Compass, and we actually built it out in an app. And this evolved into a much bigger tool than initially anticipated. Where Mike's talking about, it's not coaching, it's all those things. It's everything that we do rolled into a singular toolkit, singular tool space that we've built. So there's different ways to do it. And I want to explain this a little bit. I'll ask the audience the question, because I already know the answer to it. Let's be clear. How many people have said, man, I got to have a difficult conversation with this person today, and I don't know where to start? That's everybody. Everybody has done that, whether you're in leadership, whether you're in sales, whether you're in human resources, your customer service manager, any of those people, you're an entrepreneur, solopreneur, you've had to have that conversation. Or, hey, I've got a big customer retention call today, and I need to know how to walk into this. So rather than practicing on your client, because that always goes really well, or rather than have to learn a bunch more scripts, let's be really clear. I walked down this path, man. I've been down this road of learn the scripts so that when this person says this, I can say that, right? The if this, then that mode, which is so inauthentic. It's not who you are. And the reality is we don't remember the scripts. We don't practice the scripts and we don't role play. So that's what we've built. We've built the app that gives you the directional changes in live moment so that you can role play it. If I need to have a conversation with Mike, hard conversation with Mike today, and I don't know where to start, I'm going to be able to plug that into the app and say, okay, this is who Mike is. I think this is what the triggers are. Here's the conversational topics. And the AI is going to perform as Mike, and it's going to show how I'm going to be able to best navigate the path so I can practice the conversation ahead of time so that when we go into the conversation, I'm much more prepared to be able to do it and my confidence is higher. Because confidence comes from practice, guys, plain and simple. So this is a role play model that we have built out based on the Compass, which talks about the three paths. When you come on the 13th, we're going to do a full training on what the Compass does, how to use it, and how to use this training, I'm going to learn to speak English too. That's going to be really helpful.
Maybe you should show up.
I should show up and take the course. It's the adaptive communication model, real live coaching that you get to use with the app. It is a very cool tool.
So, you know, how real quick, and I don't want to go on too much of a tangent, we can actually pick this up on our next episode, but how are you how is this different than using your own ChatGPT? Like, we've warmed up, mm-hmm. we've warmed up the AI already, right? Like, how is this different than somebody going into their own ChatGPT and doing the same thing?
It's a brilliant question. The reality is, yes, you can do that. However,
it's a brilliant question.
Yeah, look who asked the question. Yeah, you can totally go into chat and you can say, hey, I'm going to have this conversation, but the AI is not primed with a communication model. So this is based on, again, psychology that we've built out. There are three paths that every human being is going to be on, one of the three in every single conversation, period. We've built them out. We've built the decision trees out. So the AI knows to model those particular paths. It's not just a random robotic piece. It's going to follow these particular predictive paths of human behavior. That's what we built in there. It's super cool. And I'll tell you why it happened this way. So when AI first came out, I want to tell you this story. When AI first came out, we all, and Mike and I included, tried to create AI agents that would call prospects on our behalf, and we tried to make them. Yeah, you remember that? It was a disaster.
Every time I relive this, as if I see an oncoming car getting ready to roll right over me.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and it was. But we all tried to do it. We all said, "Man, we need to make AI speak like us, and it can jump on the call and make 500 cold calls per day." And then we actually burned up a CRM that we've been banned from, and we can never play on again. It was a disaster. But what came of that was the reality. When people try to teach the coders that are trying to teach AI to speak to people, the coders don't speak people. The coders speak code. So we went the other way. And it's not a matter that the AI needs to sound like people to call prospects. It's that the AI needs to help us train better so that we are more human and we can talk to the prospects and we can talk to the clients in a way that gets us to agreement.
Every once in a while, I'll get a call and they'll get me, right? I'll recognize it. It'll be like two numbers off somebody that I'm waiting for a call from, like a doctor's office or a pediatrician or something. So, and then ever since you and I have had that episode, now when I get like an AI bot that calls me, I just talk to it because I'm so jealous that whoever the hell programmed this thing, I'm just having conversations with it and they're getting slicker and slicker and slicker and slicker. And I love it. I'm like, I feel bad for us a little bit that we were probably 24 months ahead of our time. And
I think that's fair.
I mean, we were so early in it. It would have been such a miracle to have that work. I mean, I guess I'm glad it didn't because everything happens for a reason. But I think, too, in the modern world, you know, when you see like a lot of Instagram ads right now and a communication, an authoritative communication, you know, that's one slice of communication. I definitely think in the world as it evolves, a great use of AI from a psychological standpoint to tie in a theme of today's conversation is to be able to use it to help you communicate. Because person to person, AI can't actually communicate for you yet. Like, it's not in real time that you're behind an AI pantomiming a conversation with a prospect. You have to be, at some point, authentic. You have to be a person that's genuinely engaged in what you're trying to do to make impact, to create a deal, to sell a customer, to run a business, to run a company. And you know, the brilliance of some of what, you know, Jake has created and tweaked is the app, it starts to allow humans and AI to work together so that humans can learn how to better communicate with humans. As messed up as that sounds, that to me is a niche future of AI. And I think it's on the, we'll call it earnest path, if you will, in the AI age, wouldn't you say? The earnest, honest path?
I think that's true. I think that's totally valid. And I saw an ad, we're running out of time, but remember May 13th, come to the training, go to total-disruption.com, sign up for the webinar so you can get the promo pricing on the app. There, I said it. I saw something the other day, a conversation thread that was going on, to where the question was, if a business is using AI to generate ad campaigns, do you do business with them? And a ton of people said no. A ton of people said no. Right. And I thought to myself, if a company is using modern tooling and modern technology to better their customer experience and grow their business, why is that a bad thing? If they're using it responsibly. So that's the challenge. And I thought that was just such a unique, and we'll pick that up in another one. But that was, I saw that and was just kind of shocked at the limited thinking that was going on there.
Well, I mean, that's just people who are scared and have a lot of fear. And there's just, they'll come around eventually. Maybe, maybe not. All right, man, we're out of time. Anything else to add before we part ways?
May 13th, come see us.
All right, for my esteemed colleague, Dr. Jake Clendenning, and Michael Laversi, you were just live on Total Disruption.